Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo. And tonight we're going to be talking to George Dixon. Oh, that's great.
I don't know why that says that's not streaming.
I don't know either.
Go to the helpline.
Oh, here it is. Okay, it's on now.
Okay.
All right.
So, now we're streaming, so we should be fine.
Yeah.
So, welcome to the LA Steel Show yet again.
Yeah.
And I'm here with Leo, and I'm Lila, of course. And on Friday night, we had a conversation with George Dixon, and we're waiting for him to call. We spoke to him a little bit earlier in the day, so he should be calling any moment. And we have a lot of stuff to talk about. Last week, we talked about the Merkaba, what that is, and it's sort of, as a refresher, it's sort of like your own little spaceship right around you. It's your energy field. And actually, more than one Merkaba can link up with another. You could have a larger energy field. And we talked about that last week and about how...
I think one thing I was going to bring up tonight, and which was really exciting, is that when two people combine together, the Merkaba, the normal Merkaba... is like 50 feet, right? And its energy
excuse me.
Can go up to, like, I think it's... I forget.
Leo's going to get his reference book so he can be accurate on this sort of thing that he's talking about.
But when two people... it's kind of like, when Christ said one or more people, go to the Christhood. Okay? Well,
I don't remember that.
Well, it says when two or more people in my name, whatever, that, Well, what it says is that when they get to that, when they create a Merkaba, one Merkaba can have the effect reach 400,000 miles or something to that effect, 440,000 miles. Whereas two people, their effect can reach 1.6 million miles. Okay.
Wow.
So it's really kind of fascinating. And of course, it gets even bigger and bigger, more and more, as we go along. George is a little slow, and he's having
some phone problems.
No, he's had two, could be, but
I know he had his
landline.
He had a phone problem this week when he tried to get a hold of you.
But he had some people there and
visiting.
Yeah, and he was he's probably lost track of time. But I'm trying to get to the to that spot where it talks about the Merkaba. But
you read part of that last night, did you not?
No.
Oh no.
No, I don't think so. I read it today.
Oh, all right.
When I was doing research on it, but
How did what you read sort of coincide with? Did it coincide in any way with the Mayan calendar and stuff that we?
It does and it doesn't, and that's what we were going to talk about tonight with George.
Oh, this
there
George
is. Now. Yeah, these things parallel with one another, but. Good evening, George.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you folks doing?
Oh, we're fine. How are you, George?
I'm fine. I'm fine.
Good.
I'm sorry I missed what you were saying, Leo.
Here it is, right?
Oh, wait a minute. He's got it now.
Yeah. Here it is. It says, excuse me, we're talking about the we're talking about the Merkaba.
Yes.
And we were mentioning that in this work that we're reading here, The Flower of Life, workshop. Under this section, it says Our Destiny with Cirrus. It has something here which is fascinating. It says this infrared a photograph of a gallery of a galaxy. The shape looks just like a flying saucer. It is a heat envelope which surrounds it, which we found on our computer screen. Is that this is the exact shape of the Merkaba when it pops out around you?
Huh.
Okay, 55 feet in diameter. It extends into space about 150,000 miles. If you do it in a group, When two or more come together, you can create a very different kind of Merkaba, which extends 1.6 million miles into space.
Mm-hmm.
It also has a very different potential from an individual one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was a fascinating thing because of the power of two people, two Merkabas, you know?
Sure. But doesn't that ring a bell with Christianity?
Oh,
where two and more are in my name.
Yeah, it says...
There
I
am.
Yeah, when two or more come together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And in the name of Christ. But now we're kind of understanding the name of Christ. We're kind of understanding that when two or more people rise to Christhood,
mm-hmm.
then nothing can stop you. You know, it becomes you become.
Well, let's break it. Take it back here. What is the deciding factor? That Christhood. What are you talking about?
What am I talking about?
Yeah. What do you? What is meant by Christhood?
Well, Christhood. As far as I'm concerned, or as far as what I know, Christhood is the perfect. Is perfection of humanity, of a human being.
The best you can be.
Godhood, God consciousness, you know, Christ consciousness,
mm-hmm.
so that you're one with the universe. You know.
Yes, we see that taking it a level higher, understanding what Christianity is.
Right.
Christianity is connecting to the unity of God.
Right.
And it's through the Christ consciousness that you're able to connect. But it's by using that mode of operandi, and that is with a heart.
But it says, too, that you can't reach, what does it say? You can't reach Christhood unless you have two or more people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it says here. You know, it's impossible to reach Christhood without...
Well, yes, because part of the Christhood is the... the unity of connecting together, not as separate.
Right.
So that, what do they mean by connecting together?
The Merkabas. Is that what?
Right. Well, the Merkabas will act in kind together.
They link together the way that
yes.
they're designed. And
yeah,
they
but how
one.
Do you? How, what I'm saying is, what do they mean by coming together? Is it a mental kind
well,
of? Coming?
A mental and a physical one also.
Yeah.
It's actually connecting with one another and energizing in harmony.
Yeah.
It's more of a unity where you're hooking onto the energy life force itself. You are part of that energy force, but you're able to control it
right.
or control that energy force and how you move in it.
It says here they discovered that entire galaxy is enclosed within a sphere and that a lot of loose stars are contained inside of the sphere. And outside of that, there is a huge grid, another sphere, immense in size. This is what happened to you, a sphere within a sphere with a physical body inside it. This same thing is around every person on the planet now. We also have a sphere around our whole solar system. We are encased in an eggshell, a physical solid eggshell made up of asteroids that are in a perfect sphere around us that move with us. Each planet has a sphere around it, but Earth is about 444,000 miles out.
Out of what?
I don't know. Out in space or out in, out of the sphere? Or...
Huh.
Well...
By that.
Let's go back if we can, you know, to understanding this Christ consciousness.
Okay.
All that is a unity consciousness. You can actually change the name, but it's through the unity consciousness that you connect with the outside world and you're not separated. And it's by connecting with the unity or other fields and like where any information that you need or you want, you'll have because you have plugged in to the major flow of unity, of knowledge. So, you know, it's not a matter of seeking something. You'll have whatever you want because of the unity that you share.
Yeah. You know, there was another thing that was interesting to me was when they were talking about the polar shift, but they were also talking about the there's 10,000 years of the planet where the planet warms up.
Yes.
And then there's 90,000 years of ice age.
Well, what are you referring to there, Leo?
They're talking about the polar shift.
Yes.
Okay, polar shifts in consciousness and so on.
No, okay, yes.
I think that.
Well, it's right after the Merkaba thing.
Oh, okay.
Right, see. But the reason I jumped to that is because the whole idea is for us to get the hell out of this third dimensional world before the ice age comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Which is supposedly due very soon.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about degrees of normal degrees of the planet at 50 below zero.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
I complain when it's 20 degrees.
But this happens. The Earth heats up, but then it goes. Then it goes into the wobble,
mm-hmm.
or the pole shift, and then
it gets cold.
Then it gets cold, right? And that's what happened so far. He's saying that there is a possibility that it will be milder, that we can avoid that major calamity of Earth before our ascension.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not certain if we will. You know. So
well,
whether we will escape it or not.
Oh,
you know, whether
the polar shift
the last polar shift.
Hmm.
At this point, I think in the change that we're looking at, it's irrelevant what the environment is, because what we would do is that we would actually harmonize with the environment, whatever environment is there, and we would be able to live and experience it.
Well, what it says is that we'll become like the like Venus. We'll become like the we'll become like the Hathors,
yeah.
where whether we live on the fourth or whatever octave,
right.
Of that.
Yeah.
But the Earth may in the third dimension, the Earth may look like Venus, all right, or maybe a cold planet.
Yes,
but it
yes.
won't affect us because we'll be in on a higher consciousness.
That's right. We would evolve above that where it wouldn't affect us.
That's right. Yeah.
And it makes no difference because we would create the reality around us as we're producing right now individually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, for the audience out there who's listening, what Leah was referring to, the book is actually the workshop book of the Flower of Life workshop, and this was given by Drumbolo Mike Ezodek back in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since then, I believe 2 years ago, what Drumbolo has done is that he's putting that in book form where you can go and buy it. He couldn't put it all in one book, but he did is he put it in two books, volume one and two.
Uh-huh.
But everything that Leo is explaining and so forth is in that book or in those books. And for a basic understanding of sacred geometries, I would recommend it highly. And over the years, I found with Drumbolo, it was a lot easier for me to understand a lot of what he talks about. It's because he relates to it more from an emotional point of view,
uh-huh.
where instead of following different tracks of logic or in linear thought, he was able to put it into physical experiences, human experiences, and that's what I liked about his interpretation and what he's put together with the workshop.
Now, did you go to the workshop, George?
Excuse me?
Were you physically in attendance at a workshop?
No, it just so happens that that weekend something came up and I couldn't attend. It was a four-day seminar.
Oh.
And a few of my associates, even my partner, Howard Metz, who years ago, he was a pulmonologist.
Uh-huh.
He was able to attend a workshop. And what I was able to do was hook up later on with a facilitator of the workshop itself, and that's where he taught me or took me through the seminar.
Now, in this seminar, are you does he teach those to achieve Christhood? Is that in some of these? I mean, does he take you that far?
Well, oh yes. What he does is that he actually gives you an understanding of this Christ consciousness, its ascension, and so forth. But it's looking at through through different eyes, and there's so much I could say about it, Leo. It incorporates a lot of the ancient knowledge and knowledge that has not been censored, and unraveling it, you know, for what it is. And what he was able to do with sacred geometries is that he was able to offer a primer of knowledge and of life itself, where we're able to adapt it, you know, to our way of thinking and even our educational society, science and so forth. But the universe, the reality as we know it, it is... it has a synchronicity to it. And by understanding sacred geometries, there's actually five basic platonic solids. And from those, they have the same synchronicity that life itself and all of nature, all of reality. And it's understanding those primers, you can adapt it to anything and everything.
So those are like the building blocks?
That's right.
Okay.
And, you know, it's what Drumbelowit has done is actually he's giving not only a right eye initiation into Horus, but you're also getting the left eye too. So, you know, it's it's taken me, I think, 20 years just to get an understanding of the right eye initiations. But it's only through this session that I was able to experience it, you know, from a physical or emotional point of view instead of from an academic point of view.
Yeah, well, it takes a long time to really understand these things. I mean, you've got to read about it and then kind of let it soak in a little bit and then talk about it. And, you know, it takes a while to come to an understanding because it's really foreign from what all we've learned. I mean, if we were learning this as children, it'd be very different. Don't you think, George?
Well, yes, but it's also where the focus is. An example is in the 70s, what I did is I studied the Kabbalah.
Oh, you did?
And being Christian, you know, I haven't really studied too much about the Old Testament, the Hebrew background.
Right.
But what I was able to do was I spent 4 years, and I have had a pretty good understanding of the Kabbalah, but it's all linear, and it was much different viewing that information from, let's say, a Christian point of view or from an emotional point of view,
mm-hmm.
And it was a matter of converting it over and seeing it for its duality of not only logic but also science and the way things are.
Now, did that provide a foundation for you to go further on, or did you find that what made you continue searching? I mean, a lot of people stop right there at the Kabbalah.
Well, it's not because you know it. I needed to know more, I think.
Okay.
And
you know what frightened me?
It wasn't complete.
What frightened me about Kabbalah was that George Bush was studying it with Ari Fletcher. That doesn't scare the hell out of you about Kabbalah. I don't know what will. You know, that a guy like George Bush could be possibly studying it. But go on, George. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, another way is, while I was studying the Kabbalah, I had to take a year off take a year to study astrology, because astrology played a very large part in the Old Testament.
Okay.
I had to take some time off to study that before I could, you know, advance or go one step further with that.
I got to ask you a question, because this to me was something that always seemed to contradict a lot of things. Was in the New Testament, supposedly Christ said not to go to fortune tellers or astrologers, but yet everything in the Old Testament was a soothsayer or a prophet or a fortune teller or had astrological significance. Even the Magi were star, you know, astronomers, mm-hmm. you know, and astrologers. So what I'm trying to say is why would they turn away from that science unless that wasn't really what Christ actually said? They were trying to mislead people into because when the church wrote all this stuff,
You're stereotyping astrology as a truth-sayer way of convening knowledge.
Well, no, they even said, I understand that, but it seems to me like when they started to construct the Old Testament or the New Testament, that what they did is they tried to divert.
They insinuated.
They insinuated. They said, you know, not to use this stuff because it, it was
the work of the devil.
Yeah, all that kind of crap. So, you know, it just kind of, I saw it more as a diversion away from.
Yeah, but that diversion was built in years later. Very, I'm talking about like the 12th, the 13th, and the 14th century. But that originally, that was not true. In fact, up to the 16th century, the church still advocated astrology.
Sure.
In fact, if you take a look at the Pope's tub, you know, you'll see an astrology markings of the different constellations of the zodiac.
Sure, and that's why when every king and queen on record had an astrologer,
Yeah.
And every parts of the world, sultans and sheiks and everybody else had astrologers.
Yes, but understand astrology, it's not in the same same grouping, let's say, as court mediums or court psychics, if you'd want to call it that.
Right.
I mean, all the crowns of Europe, they had them all. But astrologers were more the science, scientific focus, where, you know, everything has its cycle and so forth, and mathematically, you know, it has its proper ways. But astrology is actually following those movements, just like the different time periods it takes for a planet, you know, to revolve around our sun. This is not any hokey pokey business connected. This is actually math. What can I say?
I wasn't sure what word you were looking for there.
I don't know what I could say other than, you know, it is a true science. And what our friend Billy Marshall, who is an astrologer,
yep.
a cosmobiologist, I should say, in the early part of the 19th century, Germans actually had a field of cosmobiology, which actually was working with the medical people in diagnosing diseases and so forth. And it was accepted in the European profession. But this is going back years, because there are certain characteristics and synchronicities that the planets do have, not only their movement, but also the influence that they have on us. It's like the influence that the moon has on us.
Right.
Oh.
So one should only expect that there's all kinds of influences on us,
mm-hmm.
and that they've been charted over time.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
Some people don't put any faith in it. Other people do. But it's always surprising the people that do. Sometimes it's a president or a first lady or, you know,
mm-hmm.
People you wouldn't expect maybe sometimes mm. who put great faith in that.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny because years ago, my teacher, Bill Marshall, I would actually go to him and ask him for interpretations or how the ancient view this and view that. And he told me, he says, you go out and tell me what you think. And there was a star cluster, I think, in Taurus. And at that point, there was a bright star called Elgo. And for some reason, you know, it caught my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And the interpretations that go with a planet that's been recorded for hundreds of years is that at one time it was the most evilest point in the zodiac because it represents Lilith or Eve.
Well, which star was this?
Algo.
Oh.
Oh.
Huh.
I never heard of it.
No, but this.
And, you know, I couldn't find any interpretations on it, but I asked Bill about that, and
yeah.
he had another book that it was one of the rare ones, and written a book. It told me the background behind it, and also some of the medical knowledge connected. That if a person is affected in that point in the zodiac, that they would have problems with their teeth and so forth. And this is not hokey pokey in the sense where you know the statistics on it.
No, I was fascinated by this, by reading this, to find out that there were two. Yeah, there were actually. Well, this goes into the Lumerians. All right? when the Lumerians came down, when the Lumerians, Well, it talks about. Excuse me, I've got a bad cold tonight. But it talks about the after the flood,
mm-hmm.
I believe, what happened is Lumeria sank and then they found and then Atlantis came up and then this is about 80 or 90,000 years ago, and Atlantis was
came to the surface,
mm-hmm. yeah.
And then but this is what he said. But I thought the Lumerians were. We're an offspring of the Atlanteans.
No, it's the other way around. Yeah, it's the other way around. Yeah.
And well, anyway, what happened was, according to Drungalo, is that they when Atlantis came up, they separated this into four. I think it was four. They separated the land segment into four grids. Four
areas. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everybody then gravitated to two areas, the right and left side, okay,
mm-hmm.
and left those other two areas vacant.
Yes.
And when that happened, then what happened is two alien races came down and occupied those areas.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
One was the Hebrews, actually.
Right. Yes.
And the other was
the Martians.
The Martians, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, or the Greys, I believe.
Who are the Hebrews?
The Hebrews are the...
God's chosen people,
They were aliens, basically,
uh-huh.
An alien race that came down and occupied that section of their...
Well, what happened to them?
They evolved into what we know... You know, into what we know
well,
today,
let,
but the other faded out. The Martians faded out. I believe they were the Greys, correct?
Um,
because because
they were connected with the Greys.
The Greys, right?
Yeah, but
it's
a lot of information. So you have in this land that came to the surface, you have Hebrews, Greys, and Atlantans.
Lumerians, and the Lumerians, they created this grid or this four sections in the land, but it was I'm trying to find the section here to explain.
All right, well let me just try to explain here to anybody who's listening that
yeah.
Go ahead.
What they did do is they took the different groups of people, and this was after the Lemurians fall, or this is more the Atlanteans doing this, not the Lemurians.
Okay.
But what they did is they separated the different tribes or types of people on this planet, human beings, I should say.
Right.
And this is where you have the different races, you know, in Europe and in China and so forth. These four areas, that has changed. But what they did is they aligned them up with the energy grids of the Earth, and the people would reflect the energy grids and the influence that the Earth has, but also the flow of energy.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, what they did do is to balance the field that was set up. They had two races which they brought in,
right.
which... The one race was the Hebrew people, the Hebrew race. Now, let me just back up for a second here.
Okay.
The background of the Hebrews, they were a consciousness that were outside of our solar system, probably you know, another part of our galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened is that through their evolution, something went wrong, and what they were able to do is step back and then relive that experience. It's like a fifth grader having to go back and redo the fifth grade because something happened. They didn't get it right. And in understanding the Hebrews were a race of people. And they lived a long time, and in relating them to our time, if you look at the Bible code or the Torah, it's the story of the Hebrew people when they first landed on this planet, up until the time they left. Now, when I said they left, what they did do is the Bible code goes up to about the 28th century, and apparently, this group of people in their evolution, which would run to the 28th century, something happened, and they ended up in a very bad place. And they were given the opportunity to go back and relive the experience all over again, but to make changes that would change the outcome that they would end up in. And what the Bible code is actually the history, the story of the Hebrew people, where they've come from and where they're going. And in that, everything that happens or that we've experienced is in the code. And there are a few places, where we as humans or the Hebrews can alter reality or alter something. And apparently they'll be able to evolve, or they won't have that stumbling problem in the 28th century.
Well,
I have
here this segment is short about the Lemurians settled on Atlantis, and
mm-hmm.
It says, but the core group of this process of becoming they flew from Lemuria to the northern island, which they named Udal.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
The first thing they did was build a wall right down the middle of the entire island.
Mm-hmm.
About 40 feet high and 20 feet wide to seal off both sides. The next thing they did was build a wall across the island horizontally, much smaller, this separating the island into four quadrants. They probably did this in a couple of minutes, he said, or maybe an hour. A collective of 1,000 Christ consciousnesses can do anything. And the pyramids were built in 3 days by 3 men, and from the top down. Our present-day testing of the pyramids confirms this, but they don't understand it. What these people were doing was duplicating the human mind. Our brains are divided into 2 parts and 4 quadrants, primarily with a corpus callosum running down the middle. If there were a nose facing north, it would set up the west as being the left brain and the east as being the right brain. If you place the word love in the male quadrant, left brain, the male would see love logically, and the female side sees love as a reflection. But there is a reflection from the male side, which is in the lower quadrant of the left side of the brain, and another reflection from the female side of the right brain, side of the brain, but in the lower right quadrant. The male top quadrant is purely logical and is based on a geometry of the triangle and the square, or the tetrahedron and the cube. The female top right quadrant is purely experiential. However, a geometry of the left side being male has a female side, which is its reflection. But this experiential part of the male remains hidden. The thing associated with maleness is light, visual, and sound is associated with female. And the female side right brain has its experiential aspect up front. Her experiential psychic feelers are forward, and the female geometry is based on the pentagon. This side has the isohedron and the dodecahedron.
Dodecahedron.
Yeah, and 12 little five-sided shapes. So there is an axis which runs from left to right, making a geometrical link, and an axis running from right to left, which is an experimental link. And for every experience, there will be a geometrical link and an experimental link, and there are male experiences and there are female experiences, each having its particular geometry associated with them. And it says, they built this island like this, and they put half of the people on one side and half on the other side, and half of them became the logical thinkers and the other half became the feminine psychic thinkers of the female side. And the structures that were built on the left side were all based on the triangle and the square, and the structures in the right side were all based on the pentagon. They did this until they got to a place where the island became alive, and it became greater than the parts of consciousness. So anyway, I thought it was that knocked me out when I heard that, because I saw how they developed this group.
Well, it's the group Merkaba understanding, but each group is independent of the others.
Yeah, and it says the Greys were the ones that actually inhabited one of the grids, and the Hebrews settled in Atlantis from another system. They inhabited another one.
Right.
The other grid.
The Greys, I would look at more as the Martians.
The Martians. Okay.
They're humanoid, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It says, when the Greys came to Earth, the 10th race came from Mars, but they were not Martians like we see out there today, mm-hmm. which is basically a dead planet. I am going only by what Toth says, and he says that 1 million years ago, Mars was just like Earth. It had atmosphere, oceans, and was an incredible planet with a super advanced civilization on it.
What happened?
Well, they became infected with the Luciferian rebellion, and it destroyed the planet as a place to live. And it talks about the Luciferian rebellion, which was they created an artificial Merkaba, or an external Merkaba. All right.
That what's happening to us? We're poisoning our own planet.
And he says,
I think what happened to Mars was more of a larger cataclysm. And
larger?
Something came by and just blew out its whole its atmosphere.
Oh.
Well, it says here, what Lucifer did was that he knew the creation matter of the Merkaba that created all things, and he created it externally from what he calls electronics,
mm-hmm.
although there are other ways this can be done. Originally, the Merkabah was only to be created from internal technology, body-centered from thoughts and feelings. But Lucifer created an external one, which you could get into and ascend into the heights. You created a spaceship, basically.
And you weren't ready for it.
Right. Mm-hmm. In reality, he created a UFO. He was not the first one to do this. It had been done three times before since the creation of this universe.
Oh, well, who else did it?
Our universe, by the way, is still in the experimental stage. It's not completed. We're still learning about it, and it's not even to a stage where we can say we understand what it's all about. It's just not completed yet. And there have been three times before when other beings besides Lucifer decided to do this external Merkabah, causing total chaos throughout the universe. So when Lucifer decided to do this, which was about 2,000 years ago, or 200,000 years ago, rather,
yeah,
during the time when we were being conceived, everyone went, oh, no, not again. Yet he convinced about a third of the angels to do this, according to the Bible. I'll show you the geometry behind why he convinced them to do this. Maybe the reason was a good one. I don't know, he says.
You know, a good way to understand this Lucifer rebellion thing,
yeah,
is take a look at Star Wars. And basically it's the same thing as the machines, and it's humans, it's people. And the Force is a unity consciousness, or is that God Force? And it's a matter of tapping into it. We all have it. It's a matter of just perfecting it. And you see, that's where the Luciferian, where this the motivation and the purpose gets sidetracked into something that's artificial. Artificial armies, but you know, it's putting over or giving the power to something that's artificial.
Right.
Just like giving the power to navigate or find your direction to one of these GPS systems that you have in your car. See, it's giving over something that's real to something that's artificial, or having the focus on something that's artificial instead of something that's real.
But if what I don't understand about Lucifer, if he could create a Merkabah anyway himself, so why would he need an artificial one?
Well, it's control. It's control. So an artificial, you need something, you need power, you need an influence to set it in motion. But without the influence, it would just fall apart. So it's a matter of control. Control, but also to propagate.
Yeah.
Oh, I really don't understand, George.
Part of the Martian influence was part of that, part of the Star Wars thing that I'm talking about.
Oh.
It's the powers that take over control.
What do you think about that, Leo? Do you think that's true, that it's, would you say it's like Star Wars? Is that your understanding, too?
Well, I can see where Star Wars got developed from this concept, yeah. You know, how they created the movies and stuff from this. And maybe some way they were
trying to get us ready.
Yeah, I think all of this, George, to me is all everything that's being done in sci-fi and propaganda is a method of bringing this to the public, right? Not only are we fascinated by it, but it's kind of creating
a gradual knowledge.
Yeah, exactly, or a gradual acceptance of this. And up until I think I saw something or read something recently.
Well,
that,
Leo,
within the last few years, that said that 70% of all the people they had, there was a poll done, and 70% of the people they asked said, "Do you believe in extraterrestrials?" And they said yes. And they said, "Would you welcome them to Earth?" And those 70% said yes. That was interesting. That was out of about 1,000 people or so that take poll on that question. So, I guess, yeah, people are, you know, people are ready for it, or are getting ready for it, you know.
They're getting ready for it?
I think so. What do you think, George?
Well, I think right now people are bored of them, you know, so what, you know, along with everything else that's going on.
Yeah, just
it's like a sideshow.
Yeah, I think people would welcome it if the guy could come down, or if somebody could come down, or a group of people could come down and say, "Hey, you know, we can fix your system for you. You know, we'll fix your computer for you. You know, you just gotta try to get out of this mess." And you know, we'd be more than welcome to have somebody come down and fix this mess that we're in. I wouldn't doubt if Obama was talking to aliens right now. You know, so but
not aliens.
Well, what are they?
I don't like that word.
Extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
There. Okay.
Life forms.
Yeah,
other life forms. Okay.
I think that's better because everybody's an extraterrestrial.
Well, you take it some of the plant life or just life on this earth. Some of it is so strange, it's alien to me.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was trying to explain this to somebody the other day about extraterrestrials. And I was saying, you know, it was a group of people I was talking to, and they were all looking at me like with three eyes, you know. And I said, well, think about it this way. I said, how many of you believe in God? And everyone went, yeah, well, I guess we do. Yeah. I said, well, isn't God an extraterrestrial? They went, yeah, he is. Yeah. Well, how many of you believe that there are angels? All right. And a couple of people, yeah, there's angels. I said, well, if you believe in angels, what are they? Aren't they extraterrestrials? And they all went, they started going, yeah, they are. Well, then I said,
then you believe in extraterrestrials.
Then you believe in extraterrestrials. So if, I mean, have you ever seen an angel? And everyone kind of, well, no, only in pictures and stuff. Yeah. Well, I said, how do you know that an angel isn't, he doesn't have four eyes and eight legs? You know what I mean? And wings. I mean, the fact that you're accepting an angel with wings and flies around and is invisible, I say, why can't you accept extraterrestrials as being anything? Like Men in Black, you know, that movie Men in Black, they could be, or Star Wars, you know, it could be anything. And so everybody, by the end of that, everyone kind of just said, well, yeah, I guess you can. I said, yeah, well, what you're believing now. Is extraterrestrial intelligence? I said, why do you have to restrict it to an angel or a god or anything? It could be, you know, it could be anything.
The reason that the Bible chose angels to depict them that way is that they're beautiful to human beings.
Well, they've also supposedly appeared to human beings.
Yeah,
okay?
In that form.
In certain forms. So,
and that form is really beautiful and human-like, so
it
didn't scare us.
But also they appeared, I mean, an angel or an extraterrestrial, I guess, could appear in any form. And if you wanted it to appear in a form, you'd want it to
be a familiar form,
right.
But
and,
you see, that's part of the snowballing that's been going on for thousands of years. Because actually what they've done is that they're controlling, when I say they, the powers are controlling our thinking, our programming,
mm-hmm.
where we're taught that life, the only way we can view it is through a logical, linear point of view, not an emotional point of view.
Uh-huh.
And where, you know, we're dealing with the fantasy or the illusions or the imagination, it is not accepted. And it's always is always looked down upon. But, of course, famous people know the truth that in order for things to happen, you have to believe, you have to imagine it, and then you got to put it in motion. So it is one way that we've been held down to think, you know, you think the party line or the once you're square, you know, you're right to go to the next step. And what they've done is they've put a veil over ourselves where they've closed us off from the emotional, our emotional feelings and our emotional world. And it's through this that we are in unity with the world because we are the same substance that is in the world around us. I mean, everything I am is part of the sun. When the sun explodes or after it burns, whatever decay comes off that is what I am. And my bones and my body proper will prove that. So, you know, what it is, it's connecting to the outside world instead of the inner world. And part of this was because of the great fall that Thoth talks about that happened when we went to a closed consciousness. And it was through Thoth and some of the other spiritual masters that they taught us how we could learn about the outside world because we were shut off from the outside world.
And now we're opening up to it.
Well, so that's part of just the energy fields that we're receiving. And part of that is because of the times that we're in, too. But what it was, it's a time now where we can skip this, or we can jump this third dimension and go to higher dimensions because we're shifting from a closed consciousness to an open or a unity consciousness where now we're open to the world instead of closing ourselves off. That's been a control, but also that is where we are going, where all bounds to the outside world, the Luciferian bounds, if you'd want to call it that, are loosening, and we have the choice either to stick with the same old yada yada or raise the higher levels of awareness, but also transcends this third-dimensional reality. That doesn't mean it disappears. That means our focus would be on a higher dimensional reality that would supersede any restrictions that we have on the third dimensional level, or most of the restrictions, I should say.
So we'd be aware of the third dimension as well as being existing in the fourth dimension.
Well, yes. I mean, it's just like experiencing one level below us. And that is, let's say, the physical properties themselves.
So would it be sort of like you went through elementary school and you have that, now you're in high school?
Well, yes. But let's say experiencing lower third-dimensional levels, you can experience reality, let's say, as a tree, a hard wood. Or you can go hard times and experience life, let's say, in a crystal. Now, each life experience has different times because it takes millions of years for crystals to evolve or rocks to evolve naturally, where a tree goes through a cycle, you know, in much less time. You know, in a blink of an eye compared to a crystal. But it's experiencing consciousness on that level that we as sentinel beings are experiencing. Right now, we are in a course that we are experiencing not only the effects of third dimension, physical bodies, properties, bones, arthritis, rheumatism, but we're also able to transcend those negative responses by rising above that.
Now,
well, that'd be a blessing for many of us, wouldn't it?
Yes, but that entails though using your mind of this is a mental jump from a physical to a mental state, just like you wake up in the morning, it's raining outside, oh, God, you know, I'm going to be sick today, you know. But that's a mental thing. Now,
yeah.
That's a little bit different from the fact that you're soaking wet from with a cold or something.
Right.
That's different, yeah.
What'd you
but
say?
It's the mental state where we transcend the effects of third dimension.
What you said, it was great because Dunvalo mentioned that one of his teachers was an old guy, a very old man who he didn't know how old he was, I guess, but he used to all he consumed during the day was black coffee.
Was that Baba Ghi?
No.
Uh-huh.
This was black coffee mixed with like half a cup of sugar, and it was like a real syrupy kind of sugar.
Ooh.
Coffee. This is what he drank. He ate the whole day. It was this, and he had a big black cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
He was smoking black cigarettes, and he had this coffee and sugar concoction, and that's what he ate. But he was very healthy, and
yes. He
overcame any. I mean, so when I read that, I said, this is fascinating. I can see this because the health effects or whatever it is, once you're connected and once you are Merkabah, I guess, or once you understand the perfection of your own body, how to correct it, then essentially you can be or you are immortal.
Right? Yes.
Mm-hmm. You are an immortal. And he goes,
well, holy men can do things like that because actually, they convert the energy, their energy, from whatever energies they have around them.
Right.
And, you know, not to jump back, but the Lemurians, years and years, probably millions of years ago, they had to actually develop or evolve digestive systems because they were able to get all the energy that they need from light, from the sun.
Okay.
And, you know, if you go back, I talked about different races of people that had different types of bloods and different types of systems. And, you know, it's adapting, you know, to, let's say, the habit of the day, if you'd want to call it that, just like this holy master has been able to do. He was able to utilize what energy source that he had available. And the rest, you know, he was able to collect from, you know, the outside world or just the sun.
Okay.
You know, I'd make it a point whenever I can, it's a nice day out, to go out in the morning and in the evening and before the sun goes down and just look at the sun and just soak up some of the energy. And, you know, it's I feel so much different, but, you know, that is the source, or that is the energy source that holds everything together, every molecule in my, in my body.
Well, it has vitamin D, and that's extremely important. That's very, very important, natural stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But we have that ability to, it's within our structure, I should say, also in our DNA too. And, you know, it's amazing that this body that's evolved, that we have genes and properties of us that have been hibernating for years and years and years. And it's only in activation, you know, that puts them in motion. Just like through spherical breathing and so forth, it's taking energy and not restricting it to the perennial flow that the Eastern religions have taught us for years, you know, the Hindus, the yogis. With the spherical breathing, it's taking the natural energy that we are connected with, that there is no break-in.
George,
and
I don't want to interrupt you, but I have to. We got 1 minute left here of time, but before we stop streaming, but I want to ask, we got a number of people online who are using the chat room at this point, but we'd like to invite you to please join us, because if you to call the number and we'll put you on, or you don't have to talk, but if you want,
you can listen to the continuation of the show on a telephone.
So please call our call-in number, and which is 646-915-9505, and we'll put you on, or we'd be happy to have you. You could at least listen to the remainder of the show, because we'll be going on for a few more minutes. But, again, we have about 58 seconds remaining to the program before it stops streaming. So if you'd like to join us, please call 646-915-9505 so you can listen to the remaining.
Or you can listen to it recorded
in
the archives.
In the archives, yeah.
So that's possible, too.
So anyway, we have 39 seconds. We want to thank everybody before you lose the stream. For joining us, Cryptic and Paranormal 101, and we have a new listener that's come on recently, who is still with us, I believe. Trying to Stern viewer guide, and there was several other people that that joined us and left.
But, well, thanks for listening. Continue on.
Yeah. So thank you, and we'll be losing the feed in just a second. So there you go.
So,
go ahead, George. I'm sorry. We can continue a little here.
You know,
part of
the downfall that we experienced is that the more engrossed we got in within this creation, within this environment, and I'm referring to the Lemurians, and some of the hype and the differences between the Lemurians and the Atlanteans is actually controlling people. Actually manipulating our DNA, our genes, hindering, you know, some of the natural developments that we would be experiencing, you know, without any manipulation. I mean, this has been going on, and this is part of the practice that we as humans have been practicing for years. And, you know, I just don't want to point the finger, but you take a look at the medical profession and understand, you know, part of their work, and not only taking care of us, but also in trying to better, you know, better our species.
Right.
In whose name, I don't know.
somebody just joined us. 1111111 is their number. But if you're there, you'd like to say anything, we'd like to talk to you. I don't recognize the number. But,
if not, you're just welcome to listen.
Welcome to listen, yeah.
But the Lemurians, they were able to capture energy from the sun and just from light. And there are some stories from recent times, which, you know, going back 30, 40,000 years, that talk about some of these immortal beings. I mean, they didn't live forever, but they lived a hell of a long time. And, you know, where they would live, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And, you know, they didn't need much, but what they did need, they took, and, you know, it lasted for a while. But, you know, things have changed, we have changed, and the problem we have now, or no, it's not the problem, it's what we have to, is a lot of the energies or the possibilities that we had as a race back then has come full circle here, and some of that we're being exposed to again, and it's part of the evolution that we must follow, or we have followed.
That we followed, yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Mm. So no, I don't know exactly where to go with this, but we're going to continue. I mean, we're going to continue this until we ascend, right?
I guess so.
Or we don't, and 2012 comes by, and it's like, hey, George, we didn't go up.
the question that's going to be raised in 2012, do you still want to be here? Or,
yeah.
So the way things are going, it doesn't look like it's going to be a very positive experience, does it?
Well, I don't think that's going to be a problem, because we're going to be able to overcome that. So, you know, I think the Earth is going to be around. It's just going through a cycle right now, and if we go into a cold cycle again, what the hell, you know? We've experienced it before, but we've survived too.
Yeah, we just have to go with whatever is planned for us, and try to envision the very best for the world and for everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's all that's really the control that we have. Is what we can project and think, and there's no reason why you can't project and think good things and good thoughts.
Yeah.
And
well, good thoughts or bad thoughts, it makes no difference, because whatever you think is going to happen.
Well, I want
and that's part of the fourth dimension that we're going to be going to, where we're actually going to manifest our dreams or our nightmares too.
Yeah, and but they also said that's why some will fall back, all right, because they won't be able to handle that.
Because they'll think about their nightmares and they'll be so scary that it'll push them back to the third dimension.
Right, where they're not real.
But anyway, that's a piece for another show.
Yeah.
And we'll be talking some more about this.
But I think we're gathering a better understanding of it, George. I
really thank you, George, for pointing us in this direction.
And we got some compliments tonight. Paranormal 101 said, he really liked the new topic that we're on, and looking forward to more.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Oh, is this paranormal?
Yes, greetings. This is Stephen Orion from the Paranormal.
Well, hello, Steve. How are you doing?
How's it going, George?
I've missed you.
Oh, I missed you too, man. George, I consider George a mentor of mine since I've been listening to him for over 2 years. So I definitely look up to George and George's work, and we definitely see in the same likeness.
Well, there you go.
Well, you have a very interesting phone number.
Yeah.
Some say it's the God code, but I think it's actually a private number. That's probably why it's coming up like that.
Steve, I do recommend reading Drumbelow Melchizedek's Flower of Life Workshop books 1 and 2.
Actually, those are perfect books, George. I've been getting into them, and my problem is I'm actually more into the Hertog work because I noticed you were more into the Drumbelow's work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I find Drumbelow to be a little more for the layman.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I was looking for was a little bit more, I guess, the details behind things. And I was able to find that through J.J. Hertog's work.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. He breaks it down quite elaborately. But it's right on the money. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
What was your concept on supposedly the Lumerians resurrecting into the Mayans? Because to me, I heard that, and that sounded very fascinating. I hear a lot of correlations with what you're saying with the, because you're bringing up the Lumerians, and you guys been talking about the Mayans for so long, so I see some kind of correlation there, and I've heard somebody mention that supposedly the Mayans were resurrected from the Lumerian.
Well, I think some of the tribes from Lemuria, a lot of those scattered to Indonesia and so forth on the other side.
Okay. So do you believe these were actually islander-type beings?
In Lemuria?
Yes, because I'm on the right track then, because I've heard that Hawaii is supposedly modern-day Lemuria.
Well, it could possibly be, but Lemuria, it stretched a long distance, or a long area, a large area.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
For us listening in, who could we study to get the correct information on the Lumerians? Because there's so many scattered different works out there.
Just go into, at this point, we'll probably Google it up or go to Amazon.
No,
well.
I'll tell you where I found some material, and it's the book Biosophy.
Ooh.
It was written in the 1800s.
There's a book that Drumbelow talks about. It's called The Lumerians, and it was written in the 18. Is that the one, George, that you were referring to?
No, it's not titled as that. It's titled through Ospie, and it was, I believe, some channel materials, but it gets into the dragons and the dragon lords, and for me, I picked up a lot of Lemurian influence, but also the Indonesian influence, and to be truthful, you know, I don't know where the lineage for the Mayans actually came from. Some say it was a mixture from Atlantis, and others say that, you know, there was part of the scattered tribes Lemurians that integrated with them. But I don't know where, you know, where the lineage is on that, because I really don't know too much about the Mayans, other than my recent studies.
If I can tell you, the book that he refers to, and that Drunvalo refers to here,
yes,
he said, I found an old book published in 1919 called Lemuria, M-U-R-I-A. It says Mother of the Earth, and it gave all the evidence accumulated to that date. The first fact had to do with the coral, and coral can only grow under the surface of the water for 150 feet.
Mm-hmm.
He says, and they could see the rings of the coral around what was the old island, and this coral was 1,800 feet deep. And you are talking about a very long time for the coral to slowly grow down to the distance of 1,800 feet. The other thing that proved the existence of Lemuria is that the fauna and flora on all of the entire string of islands that stretched all the way down to the Easter Islands were identical. The same bugs, the same plants, the same animals,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Bacteria, yep. Same everything. There is no way this could have existed if they had not been joined together as one landmass, although there was no, there was so much water, it appeared to be made up of islands. And they said this is about 60 or 70,000 years. But according to Toth, about 1,000 years before it went down, this woman, Ty, and her husband,
yes.
A.I., and in having this baby, they became enlightened, and the entire Trinity, father, mother, child, went into Christ consciousness and understood the next level. They became immortal beings, and they no longer died. And he goes into what immortality means is not living in a body forever, because that is called a trap. It means never having a break in consciousness and always having a continuous memory. That's immortality. And leaving it at will, that is, if you want to, you can leave a body.
Oh, I see.
For you can see into the other dimensions and have a reason for moving on.
Mm. But we don't have immortality because we can't remember what we were before.
Or what we will be. But if you, I don't know. Oh, what, how do you explain that, George?
How do I explain that?
Now, see, that makes perfect.
Well, I can I can make the connections and what happened after that, I and Ty and so forth. And,
George,
know,
that almost sounded
easy.
Like that almost sounded like the Lemurians turned back into the light beings.
Mm-hmm. Light beings, right? To connect to the unity of one.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for on that note, guys, I also consider the light beings the Merkaba, because me and George spoke on this before, and I see a lot of UFOs where I'm at in California, and through my research, I figured out that these were the Merkabas, these supposed UFOs, and when I would zoom in on them, it would be a perfect, like, plasmic circle, and I could see there was some type of, you know, not through the camera, but I could almost feel the energetic aura coming from this thing.
Right.
And I could see the plasma moving around within it. And when I looked up the definition for Merkaba, the definition is divine light vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So, and something was compelling me to this word, tying that in with the UFOs that I've been seeing, or the light beings. So in that context, George, would you say all this stuff all ties back to Kabbalah?
Well, the Kabbalah is, it will give you the breakdown of actually what's going on. What you're experiencing, the Merkaba.
Yes.
Now, understanding that what you're saying is an artificial Merkaba. Now, a Merkaba around a person or something living, it takes the same shape, but it's not something around a person. The field is real. A flying saucer or a saucer-shaped Merkaba is something that's artificial, and it's not real. Even though, you know, the spaceship may be real, you go over there and touch it, and it moves, you know, in and out. In and out of space, but it's not something that's real. It's artificial.
Look, I have to mention something to you. You live in California, correct?
Yes.
Okay, whereabouts? Northern California, Southern California?
I'm in Southern California. I'm pretty much in the middle of California.
Listen, the reason I mention this is because if you go back to Wednesday night's show, if you can look in the archives on that, we have an interview with Roslyn Peterson. Now, Roslyn Peterson is a scientist and independent researcher at this point, but she came across some new evidence good part of California, the Pacific West Coast, the West Coast of California, Oregon and Washington State, as well as Idaho, are going to be subjects of weapons testing
by
the Navy and the Air Force, I believe, too, but by the Navy. And they're going to be doing all kinds of weird shit there. They're going to be doing aerosol, biological, as well as explosive. All right, and because of this, this is going to start in March. The last public hearing date is in March 11th. But if you want to go, if you want to find out more about it, which I highly suggest that you do, let me give you this website. It's called CaliforniaSkyWatch.com. All right?
CaliforniaSkyWatch.com.
And she has all the information there, as well as her personal phone number, so you can contact her. She's trying to get the word out in California. So it's like, you know, she's desperately afraid to see what's happening, and she knows. She's read the entire
proposal, everything.
And she's trying to get the word out nationally, and we had her on the show the other night, on our FM show, and replayed it in our show. So if you... please go to that. If you live in California, you really, really got to know what they're doing there.
See, don't get paranoid with us now.
Oh, no, I'm not. I was actually, George, I was actually going to say, wouldn't that really come from your own mind state of basically the worry that's going on? Because the way I look at it, it's all basically a matrix, and we create our own realities, as we all know. And people always talk about war, and you see war all day on TV, but I go outside, and it's beautiful. You know, I don't hear bombs dropping around me or even in other countries or in other cities next to me or in other states. So to me, my matrix is a perfect world, but if I allow that to come into my matrix, then I can fall into that trap, as you were saying. But I definitely understand that, Leo, and I am definitely going to support that and advocate that, because being somebody from California, I have to. And I do believe in some of that, because I've actually seen drones that have been flying over California.
That's right.
And
chemtrails.
These are the pilotless drones. And that's scary to me. So that's one thing I've definitely captured my own self in. I would like people to know about that, definitely. And I suggest we have to stop this, because it's turning into that movie Eagle Eye.
Have you seen the plumes coming out of the back of it, the chemtrails?
No, I have. Well, because when they do it in California, it's at the darkest of night. They'll do it maybe like 12 o'clock, and I'll see them come, and they come in twos. And what they do, right when they get over the beach, they start doing formations where they'll come perfectly together, like in a flock, and they'll spread out.
Right.
Like they're trying to basically radar a wider area, and then they'll come back perfectly into formation. So obviously they're doing some type of testing here.
Creating grids. They're creating grid patterns.
There we go. There we go.
They're creating these plumes are coming out of the back of these drones, and what they're putting in there is barium salt and aluminum oxide, all right, as well as other chaff, they call it, which in some cases they're throwing in pathogens, they're throwing in all kinds of crazy stuff. And if you go, please go to the CaliforniaSkyWatch.com. Also check out.
But there's a remedy for this.
Check out Carnicom.com as well. He's a tremendous researcher. He's done a tremendous amount of research. And there is a disease right now that he's been studying called Morgellons.
Morgellons, yes. And that's a type of fiber that comes out of the skin, right, Leo?
That's absolutely right. And Clifford Carnicom is the only researcher that is actually presently researching this stuff and bringing it out. And he's come to the conclusion that what this stuff is it's as diabolical as can be, and it is this part of this culling of the human population. It's the only thing he can see, because this stuff that's coming out of there is so damn deadly. And these new programs, they can't, even CDC and the military, and nobody is acting on this. The AMA has rejected any talk about it. The CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control, will not look at it. And even though there are hundreds of thousands of people that are being affected by that, so people like
Leo, do you think this is affecting the crops mainly, or is it affecting the humans?
No, it's affecting all of it. Because Rosalind Peterson was a scientist for the FDA, as well as for the agricultural department. And that's when she realized what was happening to the atmosphere, as well as to the crops and all of, and trees and all the fauna and so on, were all becoming dwarfed. They were becoming crippled. They were taking soil samples. They were finding all this weird things in the soil, and so they found that it's not just in California, but it's nationwide, as well as a global, massive global program, Black Ops program. That's if you look up at any time, any given day, you'll see chemtrails. All right.
Oh yes, of course. And it seems like they're trying to make a plaid type pattern in the sky over here, because there's so many just crossings and stripes that you will see in the sky in California, and it's pretty ridiculous, and nobody really has the answer here. But actually, I could take it a step further with some research I've done into nanobot technology, and I'm sure George, I've heard George speak of the nanobots, and what they're saying is that they are actually prepping us through these chemicals, where they are going to start testing these microscopic nanobots, where supposedly they could put these nanobots within their spray, and these nanobots we will actually breathe in, and they will attach themselves to certain parts in our anatomy, which will cause major ailments. Have you ever looked into that, Leo?
Yeah, well, this is all part of what the problem of what this these chemtrails are. And
yeah, I think that would be the pinnacle of the problem, right? These nanobot things.
Let's jump right to the Matrix.
Already.
Yes.
Jump right to the Matrix.
They're already putting this stuff into the chemtrails. They found it.
Yes.
They found. Not only have they found pathogens, blood pathogens. Okay. They found in the fallout. Okay. After heavy spraying. And especially in California, most of the research has been done in California, by the way, not only by Clifford Carnicom and by Rosalind Peterson and a number of other people.
What is that research on, Leo?
They're taking ground samples. They're taking.
What are they finding?
They're finding all of this crap that's coming down from these. They found that you have radioactive as well as. Biological.
Okay. All right. So I guess they are doing, or something is going on. So yeah. What's the remedy?
That's what I wanted to ask George. What's the counteractive measure? What's the counteractive measure here?
Well, I think we have the ability, our DNA has the ability to actually alter itself to protect us.
Yeah. Well, that sort of goes back to what I was saying earlier, George. Basically, if it's within your mind state, so your mind is so powerful, it could either attach itself to it or detach itself from it, right?
Well, I was going to suggest a pill, one pill. That's all you need, and it's nothing else but a placebo. But it's the mindset that you put in motion that actually the body will react to it. So who's to say that we don't have the ability to do that? First of all, You know, I see a doctor, but the doctor doesn't make me well. We make me well. The doctor works for me. I hire him. I'm
exactly.
taking care of myself. It's not what you're going to do, what we're going to do together. So if it takes a prescription or a drug or something to take care of this, let's do it. But understand that we are at a point right now, whatever we put in motion is going to happen. So if we take a pill and this pill is going to take care of us, if we believe it, it will. You know, if the body itself is going to arrange itself to move on that pattern, that you know, you could eat poison, but the body is not going to be affected by it because it's going to pass it right through.
Well,
I'm saying we have those properties in us, and we just have to activate them or believe that they'll happen.
And this basically goes back to mind over matter, right?
That's what it's all about. And even our experience in this physical third-dimensional reality. Understand that we're spiritual beings having a human experience, not a human having a spiritual experience. And we got to come back to that fact. And all of this last 15,000 years has been that tunnel or that cave that we were thrown into where we weren't seeing the light or seeing the outside. But now the outside has exposed itself, and we're in right now a revolution or a renaissance, and it's the same renaissance that hit us back in the 1600s with Galileo. And yet at that time, the sacred geometries was just coming to the surface, and some of the hidden knowledge that he had revolved around what we did as a society with this knowledge. And now NASA has hooked onto this. And, you know, they've gone way above and beyond anything that we can imagine right now. But believe it, we have it.
What he's saying is that this nano technology that we have,
scary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I've read this on my program as well. I know this, what you're relating to, because I've read these articles. And I read them to my listeners, but I tell you that this is exactly what's going on, and I want to refer you to another very, very critical report that's been out for quite a long time, and it's called the Global 2000 Report. If you just go to, you can Google that up or Yahoo it up, it's right on there. It's a government report that was sponsored by Jimmy Carter back in 1976 and by Brzezinski, right? And then it was brought up by Kissinger and signed off by Finney. The report was finished in the Reagan years, okay, and signed off by Reagan. And what this was is a report based on the culling of the population of the United States, world population, actually, that by the year 2020, they wanted the population of the United States to be reduced by 100 million people, that, you know, to sustain itself. Okay, it's now at 300 million people, all right? And they want it to be reduced to 200 million people. Worldwide, by 2050, the goal is to reduce the human population to no more than 1 billion people, all right? That is in this report, all right? And it's out there on the internet. You just Google it up. It's signed off by Ronald Reagan, right? And
well, George, Leo, do you want to hear something even scarier? Besides a report, there's something actually written in stone, literally, and this is called the Georgia Guidestones, if you've heard of them. And these are, I believe it's seven pillars, which basically look like the Stonehenge, the way they're erected. It's a monument in Georgia where it actually states the American population must be kept under 500 million.
Right. But you know what? Those were destroyed recently.
Really? Oh, my God. Really?
Somebody went out there with a damn bulldozer or something.
That's... I was actually asking people to do that online. I was saying how hard, how easy it would be for us to topple these things, and I was actually praying that somebody would. So I'm going to look into that, really.
If I can jump in for a minute, we have devices now, psychotronics devices, that actually will clean the environment, clean the air, and any kind of pollutants that's in it, it will actually cleanse it and sterilize it.
Is this some type of ionizer technology?
That's right.
Okay.
Part of this, it has a field itself. In fact, you can actually pick it up on a graph, and it's like a Merkaba. It's an artificial field, and this will actually clean the atmosphere.
We
have this technology.
Is this the Orgon Energy, Georgia?
Well, it's connected with it's understanding Orgon Energy.
Yeah.
And
well, George, does this work exactly how the household ionizers work?
No, it's a little bit different. Well, it's the same principle.
Okay.
But you're raising it up quite a few levels here of its influence.
Another thing that we're
there is a lot, I think, now coming out. With this technology, but it's not only the environment, it's not only the atmosphere, but it's also water itself. You can clean up polluted ponds and even old dump sites by water. But we have
another thing as well that we're forgetting about, which is called a SIPH, the SYPH, I believe it is, and the SIPH are the living. They're known as the cirrus clouds. People see them as cirrus clouds, but there's legend there that these are actually living, breathing guardians of the atmosphere. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That sounds very interesting, because I've been studying this. Did they ever attach the name ether to that, Leo?
It's part of the ether. I've just heard it described as scythe. A SYPH, rather, SYPH, and that they are living, breathing entities that are their sole purpose is to cleanse the atmosphere for human beings. They're for the earth, rather, and that's their job.
That's amazing.
Well, that's amazing. If you take clouds themselves, clouds are water, and I do believe that water has a consciousness of its own. And understanding this world, you know, the two things that, even in Genesis, you know, there was the word and then there was light. There was water, and from the water came light. It's combining water. Water is the...
Key component.
Everything, we are bathed in oxygen and water, and our bodies are 80% water. But understand that water is the element we use to move, and it moves dust, and it has a natural movement by itself. You can take water, what it will do, it will neutralize water and bring it back to its natural state.
And to do that
is just by the movement of this water.
But if I can tell you about the SYPH a minute, the legend of the SYPH is that if you're aware of the SYPH being there, you can enhance the work of the SYPH by directing your thought and giving respect to them. All right?
Right.
And I don't know if this is an Indian
connecting your energies with them.
Connecting your energies with them so that they can expand. All right, by doing that they expand and they encompass this thing and they get the job done. And they say that the reason that the atmosphere does clean itself is because of the work of these SYPH. All right. And it's legendary, and it's ancient knowledge that goes back to, I don't know, I don't even know where it originated from, but I've read about it, and I've heard about it, and others have brought this up, this information up to me as well about the SYPH. And so every time I look up, I try to connect to that, you know, to that energy around me, because they chemtrail the hell out of us out here, all right? And every time I come down with a cold, like I have one now, every time I come, I ever get an upper respiratory ailment like sniffles or
sinus problems.
Take some hot Chinese mustard. That will take care of it.
Increase in upper respiratory ailments in this country have quadrupled. Okay.
Oh yes.
In the last 10 years, because of the incessant amount of chemtrailing, they're attributing it to different things. But the actual statistically speaking, it is more than quadrupled. Okay. The upper respiratory ailments in this country, and because they go to the emergency rooms and so on and so forth and doctor visits, but they found that especially in child asthma, child respiratory problems. sounds terrible, but I'm trying to. When I suddenly came down with this last couple of days, I've had this cough, but what I'm trying to say is that this SIFE. And there are extraterrestrial, if you will, beings that are at work here. And if we look at this flower of life, there was something I wanted to bring up tonight. In this flower of life book, Drunvalo says that right now there are millions and millions of extraterrestrial beings right now that are coming, that are on the next octave higher than the third dimension. They are living in the fourth dimension, but they're not an octave higher than that, in that dimension, in our dimension. And they're seated there right now, and they're coming down, and they're visiting us to help us. There are millions of them that are trying to help us ascend to the fourth dimension. All right, and it's happening now.
Well, they're some are helping, but some are just watching, because what's happened is that our evolution is sped up so fast that things are happening very quick, and watching how we experience it or what we do with it.
And he said that nothing like this has ever happened in the universe. This is something brand new to them. That's why there's so much curiosity about it.
Well, there's a lot more behind that, I think, and what's happened to us and what we've been exposed to.
Because of the rebellion, right? We're coming out of that, and we're going into the and we're evolving into that fourth dimension.
Yes, but something came around that would have blown us right away if we weren't protected. And it was with our soul, with our sun. And if we didn't have the outside field, we wouldn't be here right now.
That's right.
I think this was an experiment that was put in motion, and that's why you have a lot of different cultures that are watching us. And
are you speaking of the magnetosphere?
Right. Well, yeah.
No, we're back in
1970. That's keeping things out.
No.
Blocking us from the intense heat of the sun that would have. Annihilated us,
Steve, what they did was actually they took our right away, and they artificially took us and against our will and put us in a large bubble, if you'd want to call it that, and took away our ability to do anything, and it was really confining us. And they did it to set up a bubble around the Earth, around our solar system, where we wouldn't be affected by this explosion. And what happened is that it did protect us and the solar system, and it was something that was never done before. And what they did is they set up an artificial field, artificial Merkaba. And this was a very large Merkaba. And actually what it did is they concealed... it contained our reality and everything connected with it, and it held it, suspended it, until this event took place, and then it put it back into motion again by its own course, instead of stopping it for a time. So that's one of the things that they're watching. A lot of things have been happening up there that don't follow the norm, and I don't know what the hell half this stuff is, other than. you know, it went against the normal progression.
Well, George, I've been studying the ethers, and what I've come to learn is that the ether, as defined, is a living energy. And I remember Leo speaking about Thoth and how he levitated the bricks to create the pyramid. Yeah. I was wondering if he was actually tapping into the scythe that Leo is speaking of.
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
Because this ether has been compelling me to really study into it for some reason, and it's almost coming to the conclusion that this could be the creator. Because I'm also tying the ether into the antimatter that the scientists are looking for with the Large Hadron Collider. Mm-hmm. And they are also looking for this thing called the Higgs boson particle, which is a particle that's supposedly going to show the relativity of everything in the universe, that we are all connected through this Higgs boson particle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if this particle is part of the ether, and that this ether might be our creator. Because if it's a living energy, and there's other testaments like the scythe and stuff like that, it just keeps pointing me back to it being a basic part of our creation. Have you ever seen any information to basically connect that?
Well, I think what you're...
Because we have the Ethernet, and we have so many things that are just tying this in. We have the Ethernet, and well, you know, where did this come about? And it's tapping into this living energy to connect us at a super fast speed, you know? So there's something behind this ether that just keeps compelling me to research it.
Well, it's the pattern that it follows that gives it its description, and that's the synchronicity within the movement that's been put in motion. So the movement, the consciousness, it is alive. It is a kind of principle, but it's following a pattern, and that pattern is a natural pattern of movement. So it's following that movement that you follow God, or is in God in movement. Other than the consciousness is like the vehicle that you use to connect with that. And, you know, consciousness is like water. I mean, it will move if it's directed, but, I mean, it has its own properties in its own way. And it will follow that way and follow that way with a continuous expression of itself. Until the energy gives out, until it depletes itself, and depletes itself, which is leaving, going to a different state of movement or of consciousness.
Well, to connect on to that, George, from my research, yes, the symbiosis.
Yes.
I just lost what I was about to say, but I think it had to do with the keep going, George. I totally forgot. It flew out of my mind right now.
The consciousness is just a vehicle, just like the earth here, water. Water has the movement, but it's electricity. It's the consciousness that moves it. Now, once you give electricity to water, it follow patterns, or actually, those are the two things that you need for life. And if you put those together, it's neutralizing the polarity of positive and negative, producing an offspring. Just like back in the 1800s, they took a rock and they put it in a beaker of water and introduced some electric to it, and before you know it, in a couple of weeks, that you had a small dot on that rock, and over a period of time, it grew into something that had legs, and then it grew wings, and then it flew away. And the only thing that was needed for that thing was water and electric, and that's what came out of it. Of course, you had a rock or something for it to grow on, and that's what came off of. Introducing these two elements. So it's a matter of the environment that this this process is taking place in, and whatever is available it will manifest. And in this case, you know, it manifested a water bug that got up and flew away.
Yeah.
So, you know, understand that one power water is not more powerful than lightning, but these are the two things that give life to anything and everything on this earth. And if you take a look at all the properties, all the matter, all the energy, it's made up of water and electric.
Now, getting back to the ether, I recall reading in this manual that the whale and the dolphin, the whale is the memory of the world. Okay.
Yes.
Now the whale, the blowhole in the whale, okay, the way that it breathes is it breathes in, it's directly over the pineal gland, all right, and what it does is it breathes in the ether. And directly into the pineal gland, which gives it that, which gives it its because the whale is supposed to be the most highly evolved and highly intelligent being in on the planet. Okay, the dolphin.
Well, it's the oldest at this point.
And then man is third, but they're saying that it's that their intelligence and their abilities are such that it's derived from their evolution, where they have evolved this blowhole that where they breathe in
mm-hmm.
water from this, and not water. I mean, they breathe in ether.
Energy, yes.
Energy, but ether, and it says ether, I think, and it goes to the pineal gland, and then of course into the body, and this is how it's done, and this is how you create this. You know, in the what was it? The left eye of Horus initiation.
Yes.
There was that initiation where they, where the spiral, a light spiral went to. They laid the person in a coffin, but in a slab, and the person, and it was directly where the light in the pyramid, and it was directly where the spiral of light came down to the pineal gland, directly to the head, and the person was able to either created a Merkaba, I believe, or transcended to the fourth dimension, and that was part of the initiation of the left eye of Horus.
And this is Drumvalo's work, Leo. This is amazing.
Yeah, let me explain here what we're talking about here. The whales, yes, are the oldest mammals here on this earth, and you know we can go back 500 million years.
Right.
It's that within their DNA, they have the record of the evolution of something that's ongoing and living.
Wow.
Yeah. Now you see, we have a lot of those same genes within our DNA, but they're not activated. But I'm saying is that they hold a memory of those because of the activation with them and the energy fields around those genes, even though they're not being used. Now, what the whales were able to do was to take life energy force, you know, through their pineal gland, through the top of their head, and it disperses through the meridians downward. Now, through our evolution, what we've done is we've closed off our sense of taking energy directly through our pineal gland, and we take that through our breathing, which is transverse through the Kundalini channels within the spine.
Right, right, right.
And it's it's raising that energy that we reach nirvana or we reach the pineal gland.
Right.
Now, on the other way, it's receiving that first through the pineal gland. So along with the whales and the dolphins still use that form of energy their evolution actually talks about, dolphins actually were, they went from the sea to the land and then went back to the sea again.
That's right.
So apparently they've evolved through this physical reality that us humans are experiencing.
But I think
George, would you say they're the first mammals also on this earth?
They're one of the first. Well, I don't know. other than the records that they're here now. The records tell us that they've been here for a long, long, long time.
Well, Leviathan was in I believe it's in Genesis. Leviathan was the whale, all right?
Uh-huh.
It was a great whale. That was God's greatest creation. Okay, was first creation, and on Earth. Okay, when after he created Earth, he took greatest pride. This was before he created man, of course. But his pride was in Leviathan, all right, which was the great beast, a great whale, all right, and I don't know about the dolphin in there, but definitely Leviathan was a whale.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's funny about that, Leo, is that the modern day Christians, they use the Leviathan to equate to the dinosaurs. So that it goes along with their proof of that the Earth is only 6,000 years old and everything was created within 6 days. And I laugh at that because they use that Leviathan to equate to a dinosaur and how they say that dinosaurs were only here 6,000 years ago. And it's just a hilarious concept that the Christians have. But I see something there that it could be the whale rather than the dinosaur.
The whales are, like I said, they hold the records of the Earth record, or the physical Akashic records of the Earth, and they've been able to hold that for us.
And that's because they've been here so long, correct?
That's right, yeah. Well,
they're
the oldest living mammals, life forms that is close to ours, yes. And,
well, Leo, we could tie this into Ken Akeley's work, where he was speaking of how the porpoises interdimensionally travel through the sun.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Drunvalo, he came to Earth through the sun. Okay, Melchizedek came.
Wow.
The sun. The sun.
No, I don't think that came from Michael Morgan or from Yokar.
Right.
Coming through the sun. That was Drunvalo.
Drunvalo, yeah.
Yeah.
Drunvalo came through the sun.
Yeah, I don't think Ken Akeley's work, he was speaking of Drunvalo. I don't know where he got that information with the porpoises. But he said that they used the sun as an interdimensional portal.
That's right.
Yes, well, I said that, but that's what Drunvalo...
Oh, you said that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was with Drunvalo's work with the dolphins.
Okay.
And understanding the Syrians.
Ken Akeley also talked about other stargates.
Stargates.
But he might have even mentioned the sun as one, but... I know that George has mentioned it many times, but Drunvalo's work is Drunvalo actually went through the sun.
Yes.
To get to Earth, okay?
Yeah.
And he got through that with his Merkabah, basically through a Merkabah.
Yes.
And came to Earth from through the sun, and the sun he said was a not a cylinder but a. What is it, George? It was a. It wasn't a reflection. It was a.
It was like a wormhole.
It was exactly.
It was a wormhole.
It was a hole. You know, it was a light hole actually. You have a black hole and you have a light hole, and this was a light hole where you know it just you could go through it. And he also talks about the black holes as well. In there that counteract the universe.
Yes.
Universe.
That's for another night, Leo.
Over 2 hours, and Lila already split. She got lost about half an hour ago. And I'm tired. I'm ready to go. So, but this is a great topic. Look, it was a great night, guys. Thanks.
I'm enjoying myself greatly.
Steve, it's nice hearing your voice again, my friend.
Oh, it's good to hear from you guys, and I get so much light from this show every week. I tune in, and I'm just here to show my support and support and love, basically.
Oh, that's great.
So
happy with you, my friend.
Yeah.
You too.
And look, California Skywatch, check that out. All right. Okay.
Okay, Leo.
All right, George. Have a good. It was a good night.
It was a good night. I enjoyed myself, and Lila, have a good night, my dear.
Yeah, she's already out of the room.
All right, well, God be with you, Leo, and I'll catch you next week.
All the best too. It's just this was a long one tonight.
Yeah,
but
it was.
We appreciate it, George. It was a great talk. I think we're going a long way with this stuff. I think
there we go.
I think
it gets interesting.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So, talk to you later.
Okay, God be with you, my friend.
You too, guy. Have a good night.
Bye.
And I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, those of you who stayed with us. And thanks, Steve, from Paranormal 101. And want to thank George, of course, Dixon, and Cryptic, and Return Viewer Guide, and all who joined us tonight. And we want to thank you and wish you a pleasant evening. And we'll be back here Wednesday night. Talk to you later.